This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
A republic, ma'am, if you can keep it. The biggest little word in the Bible is the word if. Over and over and over again, God says, if. If you, then I. If you, then I. If you, then I. Well, Benjamin Franklin used that word, too. He was asked after the Constitutional Convention what kind of a government the people were given, and he said, a republic, ma'am, if you can keep it. So how are we doing these days, friends? Are we keeping the republic well, or do we even believe we have a republic? Most people say we think we have a democracy. In fact, our leaders are telling us increasingly, our democracy, our democracy, our democracy, and you very seldom ever hear the word republic. That's part of our problem, isn't it? That's part of our problem, mass rule. The mass rule of an unfettered majority that is not prepared. And so today on Viewpoint, we want to talk about that. How do we preserve liberty? How do we preserve liberty? Can it even be preserved? Can it be preserved? I want to share some thoughts with you. These thoughts came directly from a Scottish professor and historian. His name is Alexander Tytler. In fact, what I'm going to share with you are excerpts right out of our guest's brand new book, but they were also on the back cover of my very first book called Preserve Us a Nation. Preserve Us a Nation. So here they are. America is at a critical time and juncture. It's reminiscent of the Roman Empire. Out of control corruption, unscrupulous politicians, gratuitous violence, and sexual depravity. So what did Alexander Tytler have to say about that? He said a democracy cannot exist as a permanent form of government. It can only exist until the voters discover that they can vote themselves largesse for the public treasury. From that moment on, the majority always votes for the candidates promising the most benefits to them. According to Tytler, democracy collapses due to loose fiscal policy and massive corruption that's always followed by dictatorship. So he says there are eight stages of a democracy, and they all follow the same pattern. And here they are. You've probably heard these before, but here are those stages. From bondage to spiritual faith. From spiritual faith to great courage. From great courage to liberty. From liberty to abundance. From abundance to selfishness. From selfishness to apathy. From apathy to dependence. And from dependence back into bondage. That's the history of Israel in the Old Testament. It's the history of the United States right now. So at what stage do you preserve America's at right now? Really? We're 48 years, says our guest, over the average survival of the rate of the world's greatest civilizations. Should we just be happy that we made it this long, or should we continue to fight to defy Alexander Tytler's premonitions? Maybe, first of all, we should recognize we don't live in a democracy. We live in a constitutional republic, if we can keep it. So I want to welcome today our special guest, Josh Bernstein. He's not going to josh us here today, but he is going to speak very poignantly, very directly. He's given us a book called Preserving Liberty, Bold and Brave Solutions to Save America and Create Permanent Freedom. Josh, it's good to have you on the program.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be with you today.
Well, Josh, you have your own program, don't you?
I do. That can be found at joshbernsteinuncensored.com or jbushow.com for short. And I cover the news 7 days a week, unapologetic and accurate with truth. And my tagline on the website is, if it's banned on social media, you'll find it here.
Well, I remember that word truth. It has kind of a familiar and unfamiliar ring. I remember a fellow by the name of Pontius Pilate who asked a very provocative and sarcastic question, what is truth? And it seems like we're asking the same question today, doesn't it?
It certainly does. And, you know, the further we go away from the truth, the more they will hate those that speak it. That's obviously from George Orwell's 1984. And it's amazing where we are as a country. You know, if you look at the Freedom Index from just the last year or two, we are no longer as we were in the top 10. for freedom of speech, for freedom of expression, freedom of religion. We're now somewhere around 30, 28 to 30, 32, somewhere around there.
Wow.
And that is just an absolute abhorrent position for the United States of America, the greatest, most freest country on earth, actually to be relegated to. And so I wrote this book basically with one goal in mind. I wanted it to become the blueprint on how to save this country using we the people, limited government solutions, and not big government. And this is the type of book you want to read with a yellow highlighter in hand. And my goal was for the reader to experience numerous audible gasps at the information that they are digesting in this book.
Well, truth could be very frightening. And that's why we very seldom hear it these days. We don't hear it from our politicians, and we don't even hear it in many respects from our pastors and priests. So there we go. And you and I are going to attempt to talk about things that are true and honest and worthy of being considered. Now, what we're led to believe, actually what we're told, is that democracy itself leads ultimately to tyranny. You can't avoid it because the masses of people that are going to decide, if their hearts are not right with God, whether it's Israel or whether it's Gentile Christians or whatever, if their hearts are not right with God, they're going to deal selfishly and in such a way their democracy will ultimately lead to tyranny, will it not?
Yes, you're absolutely correct. And I'd like to piggyback off of that absolutely amazing and eloquent introduction that you portrayed for the listeners. You know, the bottom line is, how many times does the word, quote, democracy show up in the Constitution? Zero.
Zero.
None. Nada zilch. Why? Because that is not how our country was founded, and it's not how the framers created America.
So in other words, our politicians are lying to us when they keep saying our democracy, our democracy, our democracy.
It's a form of subversion. And quite frankly, yes, you would expect that from politicians and media figures, especially those that are on the left. But when you hear people that are conservative using the word democracy, for instance, you know, Tucker Carlson, very good conservative guy, right?
Right.
I mean, he's definitely, you know, for saving America. But even someone like him uses the word democracy. But not just him. You can hear it from J.D. Vance. You can hear it from President Trump from time to time. But
right.
The bottom line is, why? You have to ask yourself that question. Why are they continuously calling it a democracy? And I think it's very simple, and I think it boils down to one thing. Individual rights versus mob rule. In a constitutional republic, we the people have individual rights. And in a democracy, it is exactly as you explained. It is mob rule. So it could be a subversive tactic by these politicians, whether purposely or not, to be using the word democracy so that when they do come after and take away your individual rights, guess what? You won't really know about it because you thought you lived in a democracy.
So you become complicit in the whole thing. We'll be right back after this, friends. Josh Bernstein, our guest, Preserving Liberty.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination. So what happened in just one generation? Hi, I'm Chuck Crismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment? Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
How do you preserve liberty? What is liberty anyway? Is it the same as license? Everybody does what they want regardless of anybody else? Or are there limits to liberty? The Bible establishes limits to liberty, both in the Old and the New Testaments, because it has to do with our relationship both with God and with one another. That was the foundation of this country. But we've forgotten those limitations. And now we find ourselves untethered on the seas of relativity, and we're just comparing ourselves one with the other and figuring that somehow by doing that kind of comparison, that we're still better than we think we are. Are we really an exceptionalist nation right now? Maybe not. Maybe we're not the exceptionalist nation that we think we are, but can we return? Can we return or save America, as our guest has just mentioned, and which, by the way, is the title of the nonprofit organization that sponsors this program, Save America Ministries. So here's what I want to share with you, Josh, before we launch into the depths of your book. It seems to me that there's a threshold of discussion that we need to hit before we go any further. So I want to do this by quoting Sam Adams. He was the voice of the American Revolution. And here's what he said. A general dissolution of principles and manners will surely overthrow the liberties of America and the whole force of the common enemy. Neither the wisest constitution nor the wisest laws will secure the liberty and happiness of a people whose manners are universally corrupt. He, therefore, is the truest friend to the liberty of his country, who tries most to promote its virtue, and who, so far as his power and influence extend, will not suffer a man to be chosen into any office of power and trust who is not a wise and virtuous man. So, if we would most truly enjoy this gift of heaven, let us become a virtuous people. Well, here's the problem, Josh. The 75th anniversary edition of Forbes magazine, the premier business magazine of America, devoted its entire half-inch thick issue to asking the question, whatever happened to virtue in America? And that was 1992. Isn't that our most fundamental problem?
Well, clearly, I think you're right. I think it is our fundamental problem. And I think that we have allowed these people to run roughshod over us for many, many years, 50-plus years. And no one's really done anything to fight back. And we think that just, you know, electing these people and not vetting them and not knowing who they are and what their beliefs are is going to somehow change the system. We've all heard the saying, I went to Washington to change the country, but instead Washington changed me. Clearly, that is something that has happened repeatedly, well over many, many years. And so we've got to understand that just because someone has an R in front of their name or a D or an I or whatever it may be, that doesn't mean that they are going to live up to those expectations and actually do what they say they're going to do. And as Americans, we have the right to choose. And when people then take away that right to choose, now all of a sudden, that's our one thing that is, I guess the best way to describe it would be the great equalizer. Free and fair elections are the bedrock of our republic, as I say in the book.
Right.
But more importantly, they are the great equalizer. When things are not going right, for instance, what was it, 22-23%? Wrong track, right track, 75% wrong track. I mean, we're talking historically bad numbers for how the American people are viewing this current regime. And if we don't have an opportunity freely and fairly to change course, then we no longer have a country. And
true.
So the number one goal of preserving liberty and the number one focus that all Americans must have is making sure that we have election integrity. And what my book does is it kind of explains to we the people, the American people, that don't look at the politicians and the senators and the congressmen and the presidents and all the cabinet members and all the people in Washington for the answers. All of our answers and all of the control is within ourselves, we the people. We have the power. The problem is twofold. Number one, we don't know it. And number two, we don't know how to exercise that power.
Well, it seems to me that we don't just have the right to vote. We have the responsibility to vote.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So when you find, as I'm hearing a lot of statistics, that somewhere around 33 to 40 million professing Christians, for instance, do not vote. It seems to me that's one of the most irresponsible things one could possibly imagine when you purport to represent something of a of profound belief system, and you're not even willing to transmit that into the government under which you're going to live.
Exactly. And you know what? You're absolutely right. With the amount of Christian voters that that are not voting or that sit out elections, I mean, not only is it preposterous, it's dangerous. And it's very, I guess you could say, you know, hypocritical in some respects, because they want to live their lives in freedom. They want to live their lives with less government intrusion in their lives.
Right.
But yet they're refusing to go out there and vote for people or vote for parties that will allow them to continue to live free from government. So I don't understand it. It's the same thing with the hunters, right? How can there be 400 or 500,000 hunters in the state of Pennsylvania that don't vote? Now, their argument, which I don't agree with, is, well, if the government leaves me alone, I leave the government alone. I don't want to be on any list. I don't want them to know I have guns. But that's all horse, you know what? And here's the reason why. What do these hunters do? They go out and they get what? They get licenses, right, to go out and hunt.
Isn't that amazing?
That's the government right then and there. So they already know who you are. So why not protect your right to not only go out and hunt, but more importantly, to protect yourself, your family, your community? You know, the Second Amendment was not for, you know, pigeons and elk. It was to protect us from an overreaching, overbearing federal government.
Oh, so it wasn't to protect hunters to get out there and bring home a deer. It was to protect us from a government that had exceeded the bounds of the Constitution.
Amen. When the government fears the people, okay, when the government fears the people, there is freedom. When the people fear the government, there is tyranny.
Exactly.
And right now, what is the great equalizer to that tyranny? Well, maybe people don't want me to say this out loud publicly, but, you know, I've been censored for more than what I'm about to say now. But the bottom line is, when you have a Second Amendment, the government is forced to reason with the people. If you do not have that Second Amendment, the government has no reason to use anything to govern you but tyranny. It's really common sense, and it's very, very simple. So the bottom line here is exactly what I just said. We need the Second Amendment because the Second Amendment protects all the other amendments. In some respects, it should have been the First Amendment, to be quite
correct.
Honest.
Okay, I want to add to that. It used to be in this country that whenever a person was understood to be a man of truth, integrity, righteousness, virtue, and so on, he was called a God-fearing man. However, that phrase is almost never used anymore. In fact, on my program, Viewpoint, I've asked many a pastor and parachurch leader, have you heard anybody use that phrase in the last 30 years? And not one of them could remember such a thing. What's happened in our country is not only do we fear the government, but we don't fear God. And if you don't fear God, you're going to fear government. You have a choice. You either fear God or the government of man will become tyrannical and you will fear government. And so it seems to me that if we really are truthful and honest with ourselves, the heart of the matter goes back to our hearts and our relationship with the Creator himself. And that goes for Jew or Gentile alike. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. The knowledge of the holy is understanding. If we don't fear the Lord, we've lost all wisdom, and now we're cast on a sea of relativity where man does the best that he can and raises up a government that's tyrannical.
Exactly. And, you know, you can chalk that up to when they removed God from the public square, when they removed God from our schools, when they removed God from our communities. You know, the left likes to argue and say, you know, it's freedom of religion, but they want to be freedom from religion.
Yeah.
You know, it's freedom of religion, meaning you can practice, you should be able to practice, but it's not freedom from religion. You can't just say that these religious aspects and things are okay, but you Christians and Jews, you have to go back, you know, into a tunnel somewhere and read with candlelight, you know, your Bibles and your Torahs. I mean, that's not fair.
Yeah,
and
well, so that's we're being relegated to the catacombs, just like in ancient Rome. That's what's happening, increasingly being relegated to the catacombs. Friends, this is a very, very good book. We're going to start delving into some of the details of it. We've been kind of laying a foundation here in the first half of the program, Preserving Liberty. $30 is going to put this hardbound book in your hands. It's on our website, saveus.org, saveus.org. You can call us at 1-800-SAVE-USA, 1-800-SAVE-USA, or write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Writing a check and $6 for postage and handling, and we're going to get the book in your hands. Now, we are in the midst, a week and a half away from what some believe is the most momentous presidential election in the history of the country. Voter integrity is on the line. If you can't trust the election, if you can't trust the procedures, then the American people lose their faith and their confidence in the very system that's supposed to protect liberty. What are we supposed to do, Josh?
Exactly. And you know what? You bring up a great point, because now that clearly Donald Trump is winning this election and that Kamala is crashing and her campaign has turned from joy to anger. And by the way, can we also discuss the fact that when she was anointed through the coup and now ran on the, quote, joy campaign, let's talk about the origins of where the joy campaign came from. Back in 1933 to 1945, during the Nazi occupation of Germany, while the SS soldiers were out there killing gypsies, Jews, and everybody else, you know, the morale was a little bit low. And so what did they have to do? Well, they had to create this fake thing called the Joy Campaign, in which they did educational arts and crafts and, yes, sporting events and competitions to, quote, artificially boost the morale of the soldiers so they could continue their atrocities.
And a big smile with a ungodly laugh.
Fast forward to 2024, and a presidential candidate is using Nazi propaganda as their slogan. How insane is that?
All right.
So, yes, you are correct. Election integrity is everything. And, you know, President Trump needs to understand, Not just our lives are on the line, his life, his freedom is on the line. Not to mention the January 6th innocent political prisoners that are rotting in a jail cell without their due process rights, their lives are on the line. So many great and incredible things can happen with this victory by President Trump, God willing.
Or the other way around. So let's quickly try to analyze, if we can, what do you see are the greatest issues jeopardizing voter integrity and confidence?
Clearly the mail-in ballots, early voting, those two. Look, let's get this out right now. Nowhere in the Constitution does it say that Americans have the right to vote, by mail, okay? It doesn't exist anywhere in the Constitution. This is something that has been made up in the last, I don't know, what, 30, 40, 50 years, whatever it's been. It's
right.
Exacerbated really bad in the last 15 to 20. And so the left realized, oh, we can use a plandemic, I'll call it what it was. We can use a plandemic to shut down the country, and then we can go to these judges and we can say, hey, look, everybody technically is a indefinitely confined voter because everyone's locked down. And then some left-wing judge goes, yeah, you're right. Okay, we can all do that. And then, boom, they change election laws. And remember, all election laws are done at the state level and the legislation thereof. They are the ones that control the times. They control everything having to do with elections, not the federal government. So you had these secretaries of state coming in, these George Soros owned and operated secretaries of state coming in and changing election laws and hiding behind not the law, but hiding behind the guise of the pandemic and the lockdown.
Right on. We'll be right back after this, friends. Josh Bernstein, our guest, Preserving Liberty.
There is so much more about Chuck Crismeyer and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section, God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. saveus.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at saveus.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, saveus.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, saveus.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived. Save America Ministries website at saveus.org.
Again, I welcome you back to Viewpoint. Our viewpoint does determine destiny. There are no neutral viewpoints, friends. No neutral viewpoints. Period. Every viewpoint sets a trajectory, a course, for destiny in some way, both for your personal life, for our country, for your family, and so on. Now, we're talking with Josh Bernstein concerning his book, Preserving Liberty, Bold and Brave Solutions to Save America and Create Permanent Freedom. And, you know, permanent freedom, if we persist, because freedom isn't free. You've got to pay the price. You've got to sacrifice for your liberty. But the book, $30, a hardbound book, is going to open your eyes to a whole lot of very defined issues that I think are much worthy of our serious consideration right now. So it's on our website, saveus.org. Give us a call, 1-800-SAVE-USA, 1-800-SAVE-USA, or write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Again, writing a check, add $6 for postage and handling. Now, there are so many things that are talked about in this particular book, and we don't have time to get into in-depth with with most of these, but we've danced around a few of them. And one of the most serious ones that we're dealing with right now is election integrity. And, Josh, you give 5 proposed changes to secure our elections. And I think they're very worthy of our consideration. Can you distill those for us?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, we've got to get rid of these mail-in ballots, number one. We've got to put a curb on that. You know, it was supposed to be just for the elderly, infirmed, or the military overseas.
Exactly.
But we can clearly see that it has been bastardized to be used as a tool or a weapon, if you will, by the left to consummate, you know, election fraud, basically, because it's the hardest fraud to be able to detect. So that's the other thing. We need mandatory voter ID in every single state, and the signatures would have to match the ballots. And then the other thing is no more sandbagging. We need to get rid of these machines 100%. They've been attached to the internet. I prove it in the book numerous times. I give examples of it. These machines are faulty. They can be pre-loaded with malware and things like that. And so we've got to get rid of these machines. We've got to go back to paper ballots. We've got to go back to smaller precincts. And we need to get the votes counted and out and ready to go by midnight. And most importantly, no county, absolutely no county, can report first before another county, or you will have exactly what happened in Georgia in 2022 with Raphael Warnock and Herschel Walker. Herschel Walker was crushing Warnock the entire night by 10, 11, 12 points. I called my buddy from Voter GA, Garland Favorito, and I said, Garland, what's going on? I'm noticing Fulton County hasn't reported yet. I said, they're sandbagging. He said, yeah. And I said, you think he's going to pull this out? And Herschel Walker. And he said, no, I don't. I think they're sandbagging. They're waiting to get the count from all the red counties. And once they figure out how many they are, they're going to add up what they need. They're going to put in the fake votes and go, boy, that was a real nail biter. But in the end, Warnock won. Give me a break. We've got to get rid of the sandbagging. And quite frankly, assuming President Trump wins, I have the perfect way to solidify our elections, not only giving independent voices more power, but more importantly, taking the power away from the big blue cities. And if you look at what Nebraska and Maine does, they don't do a winner-take-all type of election.
Uh-huh.
In other words, they don't they proportion out their electoral votes based on some counties. I would like to see 50 Nebraskas or 50 Maines. And here's what I mean by that. We have right now 3,142 counties or county equivalents in the United States of America. And unbelievably, 50% of our entire population lives in only 144 of those counties. So how can we sit here with a straight face and say that we are a representative government of, for, and by the people when 95% of the people do not have one iota or say in who their elected officials are? 5% is making all the decisions for the country for the other 95%. So how do we change that? How do we go back to a representative government of, for, and by the people? And how do we take the power structure away from the big blue urban cities and give it back to its rightful owners, we the people that live outside of those cities? Well, you have to look at the fact that you have to break it down between metropolitan, micropolitan, and sparsely populated. There's a formula that I came up with involving those three, and you'd have to get 51% in order to win the presidency. But it's all in the book. It's a little more detailed than that, so I don't want to give it all away. But that's exactly how we would come away with an opportunity to give those electoral votes back to those sparsely populated counties that have no say, to those micropolitan counties, which are counties between 10,000 and 49,999 people, which there are thousands of. And then, of course, give more of the electoral votes to the ones that have a bigger, you know, population. I mean, we can still be fair about it,
right,
but we can still disperse that power structure away from the big blue cities. Because if you look at a state like Illinois, Illinois is a bright red state. If you take out Crook County, right, that's the one where all the population
is, Chicago,
and that's why the state always goes blue. Look at Colorado. Colorado used to be a solidly red state. But what happened? What happened to Denver? Well, a lot of people from California and elsewhere moved into Denver, the Denver metropolitan area, turned the state blue, but the rest of the state is bright, bright red. Even Arizona, for that matter. Pima County, Maricopa County is now much more blue than it ever was. But we still do have a lot of the rural areas that are bright red, too. But what I'm saying is, let's stop that. And the way to do that is to do an electoral vote. See, the left wants to get rid of the Electoral College altogether,
right,
because it doesn't work for them, right? They want to run up the coasts with the population, and that's it. Republicans would never win elections ever again. My plan would actually not only stop them from winning every election, but more importantly, it would allow true independent voices to actually go out there and run campaigns and perhaps even win. You wouldn't feel like you're throwing away your vote.
All right. You've done a massively beautiful and wonderful job in dealing with this issue, and that's why I wanted to bring it up, because seldom does anyone come up with specifics like what you have done. Certainly in your book, and we can't cover all of that right now. But I urge people to get a copy of the book just for that purpose. All right, so you've got answers. There are answers. The Congress was elected to represent the people in that very kind of thinking. But when it comes down to the presidential election, it breaks down, doesn't it?
Oh, completely. Absolutely, completely. You know, one of the things we need to do is we need to have a runoff, almost similar to the Knesset in Israel. And so that you have, and this isn't in the book, but this is just off the top of my head. I've been thinking about this for years. Imagine if we had a true runoff to where you had the top three. Then what would happen is a true independent could actually vote for an independent and not feel as though they're giving the vote to the left or to the right. So then, in the end, you could have the Republican against the independent. It could be the independent against the Democrat. It could be, you know, the Republican against the Democrat, whatever it may be. But we ought to have more choice rather than the two-party duopoly, as my good buddy Roger Stone, who also has endorsed the book, always talks about.
Well, we don't. One thing we don't want is 12 political parties like Israel.
No, I agree. We don't need lists or anything like that. But I think that when it comes to having an independent, a Republican, and a Democrat being able to run three separate campaigns and let the best party win, what would end up happening is the majority, and again, I say this with a clear conscience, the majority of the American people, as we are a center-right nation, would pick the Republican Party and the independents at the end, meaning it would be a Republican against the independent, and the Republican would probably win, or the independent would win, whatever it may be.
Or the Democrat Party would have to completely reform itself.
Now you're thinking.
Okay.
There you go.
See?
You got it?
See, we got two broadcasters here solving all the problems of America.
Exactly. Amen to that.
Okay. Well, you know, the next big problem, we hear so much talk about the borders. And the reality is this nation is a nation of immigrants. There's no question about that. On the other hand, it's also supposed to be a nation of law. And so if you don't have laws that govern the immigration, and so you can control and see who's coming in, who's not coming in, is it going to be advantageous to the country or not? If we break that down, then there become ulterior motives in order to open the borders for false and fraudulent reasons. And isn't that really what's happened?
No question about it. You know, in 1833, Joseph Story, an associate justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, stated this about immigration policy. This is in the book. Quote, if aliens might be admitted indiscriminately to enjoy all the rights of legal citizens at the will of a single state, the Union itself might be endangered by an influx of foreigners hostile to the institutions, ignorant of its laws and powers, and incapable of a due estimate of its privileges. Now, Joseph Story was absolutely correct.
Exactly.
Now, I will add this to it. Immigration without assimilation is an invasion, no matter how you look at it.
All right. Okay? So let's call it what it is. This has been a Biden-instituted invasion, intentional, unlawful, and facilitated continually, even by using American taxpayer dollars to literally fly in almost 500,000 illegals into cities around the country. Unbelievable. Yep. Just unbelievable. All right, friends, again, Josh Bernstein, our special guest, his book, Preserving Liberty, Bold and Brave Solutions to Save America, Create Permanent Freedom. I think you're going to find this extremely helpful, prescient in some respects, certainly solving a lot of problems, real problems. It's on our website, saveus.org. We'll be back.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, I'll build my church. Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, behold how they love one another. Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
Welcome back to Viewpoint, friends. Viewpoint does determine destiny, as we say regularly here on the program. And today we're talking with Josh Bernstein, a fellow broadcaster. who has written a very wonderful book, Preserving Liberty, Bold and Brave Solutions to Save America and Create Permanent Freedom. And his picture's on the front of the book, and he's pointing at you or me. He's pointing at all of us that we have a responsibility to do something. And what we do, we need to do quickly, because we are rapidly following the trajectory of the ancient Roman Empire. It's just happening. It's happening right in front of us. So the balance of the book is dealing with issues like what happened with regard to the COVID situation. We're not going to go into that because I've talked so much about that in my program. Let's talk about an armed society is a polite society. That's the headline of this particular chapter, because it's obviously dealing with the Second Amendment. You've already said that the Second Amendment, I believe you've said this, that the Second Amendment is actually there to secure all the other freedoms. And that's true. So an armed society is a polite society. That might overstate the matter for some. What do you mean?
Well, it means that the more people that are armed, the more safer society is. And I know that that's kind of a hard thing for a lot of people on the left to kind of, you know, wrap around in their head. But the reality is this. Which sounds better as a news headline? Crazed gunman runs into unarmed school and murders 25 students and, I don't know, five faculty members. Or would you rather see armed crazed gunman runs into school, is shot and killed by armed security officer, 25 students' lives and faculty members were saved? I don't know about you, but I'd like the second one, okay? And
right.
So I talk about a lot of different things in the book, but one of the things that I talk about is the Safe Schools Act. That's something that I created. One thing that people need to understand is that I had a congressman write the foreword for this book on purpose, Congressman Paul Gosar, good buddy of mine, great, great patriot. The reason is that once he's read this, I want him to introduce these things as legislation. You know, a lot of people write these books and they complain about the issues and the problems. Well, that's wonderful. Do you actually have solutions? This book is only 157 pages. It's an easy, quick read, but there are 10 legislative ideas and an additional 30 other solutions all in this book. And again, one of them that I talk about is getting rid of these gun-free zone laws. Absolutely get rid of them completely, because all it does is invite violence. When, I mean, a criminal doesn't want to meet an armed resistance, right? They want to go into an area that they know the people are going to be unarmed so that they can create, you know, the havoc and murder or whatever it is that they want to do. But they're not going to continue to do that if they know that they're going to meet an armed resistance. And so what we're doing is we're basically, it's like someone that has a house that says, we don't believe in guns here, you know. Which house is going to get robbed, you know,
well,
in the neighborhood?
Let me be real frank about this. I have grown up in a family, not just my own immediate family, but my heritage on both sides. I'm not aware that any of them ever owned any firearms, okay? Just not aware of that. So firearms have never been part. We were not hunters, and firearms have never been part of our lifestyle. However, I agree with your principle, and let me share what our founders had to say about this. It's right in your book, and we need to get it out there. Here's what Thomas Jefferson had to say in a letter to the father of our Constitution, James Madison. No free man shall ever be debarred from the use of arms. I prefer dangerous freedom over peaceful slavery. What country can preserve its liberties if their rulers are not warned from time to time that the people preserve the spirit of resistance? So let them take arms. Benjamin
Amen.
Franklin, those that chose to give up essential liberty to obtain a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. Democracy is like two wolves and a lamb voting on what to have for lunch. Liberty is a well-armed lamb contesting the vote. Patrick Henry, a Christian gentleman from Virginia. You remember, give me liberty or give me death? Here's what he said. Guard with jealous attention the public liberty. Suspect everyone who approaches that jewel. Unfortunately, nothing will preserve it but downright force. Whenever you give up that force, you're ruined. The great object is that every man be armed. Everyone who is able might have a gun. Now, those are pretty strong statements, and that's even coming from a Christian gentleman. And so I embrace what they say. I embrace, even though I have no gun fetish myself. I'm not into guns per se, but I own them. How's that?
Well, I think that's wonderful. I own guns. I think a lot of people own guns. Thank God there's 400 million guns in the hands of about 120 million Americans, of which 24% have more than two. So that's a wonderful thing that that has happened. But you have to understand, what are the three basic tenets of annihilation when it comes from communist dictators? First is registration.
Right.
Second is confiscation. And third is extermination. And you don't have to be, you know, a history buff or a wizard to figure that one out. Just look at Mao Zedong and the Great Leap Forward. Just look at the Bolsheviks. Just look at Stalin, Lenin, Hitler, Pol Pot, Idi Amin. I mean, the list is endless.
Yes.
The people that didn't have the right to protect themselves no longer are here. And so that's why the Second Amendment, and that's why I put a lot into this chapter. I don't remember what number it is. I think it's six offhand. But I put a lot of information in that chapter because I want people to understand, no, don't be afraid of guns. Guns are a good thing. And when I see people out walking around, if I see somebody, you know, with a gun on their hip or something, I feel immediately safer. I don't feel like they're going to whip that gun out and start shooting everybody. But I feel safe that if, God forbid, some crazy decided to do that, that person or myself with a concealed carry are going to, you know, exercise our Second Amendment rights, save our lives and save the lives of others.
If we truly lived in a genuine Christian or Jewish society where the people walked in the fear of the Lord and were walking righteously and virtuously, the whole issue of guns would be relatively irrelevant. But that's not the society we live in. And so we need to have the ability to protect. Moving from there to censorship, you quote President Harry S. Truman, a Democrat, who said, once a government is committed to the principles of silencing the voices of opposition, it only has one place to go. And that's down the path of increasingly repressive measures until it becomes a source of terror to all its citizens and creates a country where everyone lives in fear. The voice of a Democrat. Wow. But censorship has become the means of winning the war today.
Yeah, no question about it. Look, I mean, you know, for what the American media, or as I like to call them on my show, prestitutes, do.
Now, so what was that again?
I call them prestitutes.
Prestitutes.
Because
very interesting term.
They sell out to the highest bidder. They lie. They deceit. They edit. They, you know, leave out context. I mean, you know, they are indeed the fourth estate. They are no different than Pravda was in Russia.
And so, Pravda supposedly meant the truth, but it was just the opposite.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And so one of the solutions that I have in the book, I go through a lot of different examples of fake news. And by the way, one of the greatest accomplishments and gift, if you will, to the American people that President Trump has ever, ever laid upon us is the fact of fake news. He's the one that took it and brought it mainstream. He talked about fake news. He turned Americans into skeptics, which, again, is a wonderful development. Because the more skeptical we are of the government, the less we're going to trust them and believe in them and rather believe in ourselves.
Well, maybe it's time that we trusted God and not government.
Exactly.
Maybe we need to shift our focus. John Adams wrote to Thomas Jefferson, and here's what he said. Have you ever found in history one single example of a nation thoroughly corrupted that was afterwards restored to virtue? And without virtue, there could be no political liberty. Will you tell me how to prevent riches from becoming the effects of temperance and industry? Will you tell me how to prevent luxury from producing effeminacy, in other words, homosexuality, intoxication, extravagance, vice, and folly? I believe no effort in favor of virtue is lost. Well, interestingly, at the very heart of the Bible, Old and New Testament, is virtue. Mm-hmm. Righteousness exalts a nation, but sin, anti-virtue, is a reproach to any people. So, as John Adams wrote, he said, "Sir, may plan and speculate for liberty, but is religion, that is, religion and morality alone, which can establish the principles upon which freedom and liberty can securely stand. The only foundation of a free constitution is pure virtue, and if this cannot be inspired into our people in greater measure than they have it now, they may change their rulers and the forms of government, but they will not obtain a lasting liberty." That is the foundation of it all. So, whether it's in Israel or whether it's here, these two democracies, that is, limited democracies,
constitutional republics,
are in danger every day through illegal immigration, through unrighteousness, through rebellion against the God who made and preserved us a nation. And the only real hope is for our hearts to be changed, Josh. That's my conviction. What say you?
Well, I think you're absolutely correct. And I'll add to the fact that the way this interview started and the way it's going to end is all about the same thing. We gave you a republic. Are you willing to fight to keep it, right?
Exactly.
And Franklin replied, "A republic, if you can keep it." With a sense of intrigue and confusion, she replied, "Dr. Franklin, why would we not be able to keep it?" And what Franklin said next rings true to present day, because the people, on tasting the dish, are always disposed to eat more of it than does them good.
Tells us a bit about human nature, Josh. No wonder we needed a God to deliver us from our human nature. That it came about through rebellion going all the way back to the garden. All right. Thank you so much, Josh, for joining us. You've been a blessing here on the program, and I hope you and I will be able to do some further things in the future to talk about the things that really matter. Preserving liberty, my friends. He's given us some. Go ahead.
What I tell everybody else, anytime, any topic.
All right, my friend. Again, friends, the book, Preserving Liberty, Bold and Brave Solutions. Yeah, to save America and create freedom and liberty. That's where we're at. $30 will put this hardbound book hot off the press in your hands. Just give us a call, 1-800-SAVE-USA. Write to us at Save America Ministries, or give us a call at 1-800-SAVE-USA. If you're writing to us, add $6 for postage and handling. And significantly, I want to urge you to become a partner with us. Notice, friend, we don't rely upon commercial advertising and never have. We don't want any of that to compromise what we say or don't say on this program. And so, we rely upon God, and He relies upon you. We rely upon God to provide, but He relies upon you as He would touch and move in your heart to respond. I hope you'll do that. If you haven't already, I hope you'll begin to do that and become a partner. Give us a call, 1-800-SAVE-USA. Go to the website, saveus.org. Write to us and pray for this upcoming election. If you haven't already, friends, the future is in our hands.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.